This episode of The Y-Files is brought to you by Shopify.
The sea doesn't forgive. It doesn't negotiate. Millions of lives have been lost since humans first sailed beyond the sight of land. Sometimes the sea doesn't kill. It takes. Ships found adrift, completely intact and completely empty. Meals half eaten on tables, navigation equipment still working, logs that stop mid-sentence. No signs of struggle, no evidence of evacuation. The people are just gone. Some ships disappear and return days later, others decades later. Ghost ships reappear in strange places, some right where they started, some 1,000 miles off course. In fact, one ghost ship was so far off course, it was found in the desert.
I need your help. It's an emergency.
What do you need? I'm kind of in the middle of something here. Is that my wife's blouse?
No, you jive turkey. It's part of my new disco fashion line, Studio Fini 4. We sell tank tops. Yeah, you know, tops for fish tanks.
With sequins?
Well, fish are all about boogie nights and glitter lights. These things are flying off the shelves ever since Gertie's TikTok video went viral.
I think you've had a little too much blorpus tonight.
I can quit anytime I want. And I didn't call you for your pharmacological expertise. Check it out. 6 million views of Gertie doing a hustle in a sequin hop cover. We're getting orders from all over the world. Hey, tell them we're backed up on orders. No pickup today. Oy, that's the fifth walk-in customer today. I need your living room for additional inventory, your kitchen for shipping, your bathroom for the Beaver Brothers disco ball assembly line.
Absolutely not. Your business has already taken over my garage.
That is recreational. Besides, I'm trying to run an empire here. I got 3,000 unanswered emails, orders aren't getting processed, inventory's a mess. I can't keep up. This side hustle is hustling me, you dig? Don't worry, baby. I'll find some more gold to make for your disco pants. Come on, human. I need help managing this disco inferno.
You need Shopify. They'll manage the disco madness for you.
Oh, did you just hustle your way into today's sponsor?
I sure did. Shopify is the ultimate tool for starting, running, and growing a business. Whether you're selling online, in person, or across social media, Shopify has everything you need to succeed. Simply design your store, track sales in real time, and use powerful marketing tools to grow your audience. And with Shopify Magic, AI tools help you write better product descriptions, improve images, and elevate email campaigns.
But what if someone has a sequin emergency? How are they supposed to get help?
Fast, seamless communication keeps customers happy. Shopify Inbox lets you chat directly with them and handle their needs in real time. Shopify helps you reach your customers all over the world and takes the hassle out of shipping, international sales, and taxes. Shopify is trusted by millions of entrepreneurs in over 170 countries to manage inventory, process payments, and scale their businesses. We actually use Shopify here in the studio to handle our merch orders. It's made managing and shipping merchandise to our fans simple, efficient, and stress-free. If you're just starting out or ready to take your business to the next level, Shopify makes it easy to turn your ideas into reality. Go to shopify.com/yfiles to get started today.
Shopify.com/yfiles.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm gonna be rolling in the bones, or clams, or whatever you call them. Disco's back, baby. You got a nice beaver, nice beaver.
I told you, those are not the lyrics to that song.
You know how to show it.
It was December 4th, 1872. Captain David Morehouse stood on the deck of his ship, the De Gracia. He was halfway between the Azores and Portugal when he spotted a vessel acting strange. Morehouse raised his spyglass. The ship's sails were set wrong for the wind. It drifted erratically, like there was nobody at the helm.
Yeah, sounds like every New Jersey driver.
Please don't interrupt when I'm setting up a scary scene and leave New Jersey alone.
Sorry, but you ever drive through Fort Lee with the GWB backed up?
I have.
That's scarier than this story.
So, Morehouse changed course to investigate. As he got closer, he signaled the ship. No reply. Morehouse could feel it. Something was very wrong. As the De Gracia came alongside, Morehouse saw there was nobody on deck. This was a 100-foot merchant brigantine, a 250-ton cargo ship. This is the middle of the day. There should be at least 6 or 7 men working, but there wasn't a soul in sight. The ship's name was painted on her hull, Mary Celeste, an American vessel that left New York weeks earlier. Morehouse recognized the name. He knew her captain, Benjamin Briggs, a respected sailor with 16 years' experience. Briggs was competent and reliable. None of this made sense. When his first mate asked permission to board, Morehouse took a moment to calculate the right move. He had his own crew to protect. Every sailor knows the risks when he sets sail. Usually, you come back safely. But sometimes the sea has other plans. Bad weather, a shallow reef, pirates. He didn't see any evidence of any of these. That made the situation more unsettling. Every instinct he had told him to leave the Mary Celeste adrift. But there was a nagging voice in the back of his mind. What if it were you? Morehouse sighed and said to his first mate, permission granted.
So, hang on. You're saying the mate was a mighty sailing man, the skipper brave and sure?
You did it again.
You what? I'm trying to break the tension.
I'm trying to create tension.
Oh.
The board.
We seem to be at an impasse.
The boarding party found the ship in good condition. Captain Briggs' belongings were in his cabin undisturbed. His papers were in order. His pipe was by his chair. His pocket watch was there, still ticking. Another cabin contained women's clothing neatly folded in drawers. Men's jackets hung on a coat rack, clean and pressed. A book sat on a nightstand with a bookmark wedged between dry pages, as if someone was just there quietly reading. Another cabin held children's toys, arranged and orderly, as if waiting for their owner to return. All the beds were made. The ship felt lived in. The boarding party continued their search, but the more they looked, the more uneasy they became. The galley showed signs of recent use. A meal was still on the table, half eaten. There's plenty of food and water aboard, still fresh. In the hold, they counted over 1,700 barrels of industrial alcohol. That ruled out pirates. They wouldn't have left the alcohol.
But why is the rum gone?
That cargo was worth more than the ship itself.
Booty.
Right. Pirates wouldn't have left anything but a mess. But there was no sign of a struggle or people scrambling to escape. Pirates didn't do this. A single lifeboat was missing, as if Briggs just calmly left. That didn't make sense to Morehouse. There was some water in the bilge, but nothing serious enough to abandon ship. The hull was intact. The Mary Celeste was perfectly seaworthy. All essential rigging worked fine. Most tools were there. But the navigation equipment was missing. No chronometer. No sextant.
I always saw a few of those at Coachella.
A few what?
Sextants. I thought about trying one, but patchouli oil makes it hard to concentrate. And the sand, that's a little risky.
Not a sextant, a sextant.
What'd I say?
The last entry in the logbook was dated November 25th, 1872, 9 days before Morehouse found her. It noted their position near Santa Maria Island, but mentioned nothing unusual. No storms, no illness, no distress. Just routine observations followed by nothing. Eerie silence. 10 souls had vanished without explanation. Captain Benjamin Briggs, his wife Sarah, their 2-year-old daughter Sophia, and 7 experienced crewmen, all gone without a trace. This story repeats over and over again. January 31st, 1921. C.P. Brady was on lookout duty for the Coast Guard at Cape Hatteras.
Wait, who Hatteras?
Cape Hatteras in North Carolina.
That makes more sense.
Brady saw a large ship that ran aground on Diamond Shoals. The 5-masted schooner sat on the sandbar, its sails still up. It was the Carol A. Deering, a commercial ship, nearly 260 feet long, built in 1919, practically new. A rescue team boarded the Deering, and like the Mary Celeste, it was completely abandoned. But the crew's personal belongings and navigational equipment were missing. The ship's logs and papers were gone. But what's strange was, in the galley, a meal for the crew of 10 was laid out on the table, the food untouched. They were never heard from again. Most ghost ships are found this way. Empty, a meal on the table, everything in working order, but no crew. Those stories are disturbing, but the really scary ghost ships are the ones found with the crew still aboard. February 1948, the American vessels Silver Star and City of Baltimore picked up a troubling message while navigating the Strait of Malacca. The radio crackled, "All officers, including captain, are dead, lying in chart room and bridge. Possibly whole crew dead. Send doctor. Urgent." And then a long pause. Then the message ended with two words:
"I die."
The transmission came from the Dutch freighter Oranjedan. The Silver Star changed course toward the coordinates. As they approached, Captain Morrison spotted the Oranjedan drifting aimlessly. No smoke from the stacks, no movement on deck. Through his binoculars, he saw a figure slumped over the radio room window, not moving. Morrison called through his megaphone. No response. He assembled a boarding party with clear instructions. Whatever happened could be contagious. Move slowly. Don't touch anything. On the Oranjedan, everything felt wrong. The air smelled of copper, that metallic, sickly sweet odor of death. Morrison and his men held handkerchiefs to their mouths. One of the younger sailors ran to the edge of the deck and threw up over the side. They were not prepared for this. Bodies were everywhere, starting to decay. Every crew member was dead. But they were on their backs, arms outstretched and frozen by rigor mortis. Their eyes were wide open, all staring at something. Their mouths were frozen in silent screams. Their faces twisted into expressions of absolute terror. Morrison's first officer, Tom Becker, was a World War II Navy combat vet. He'd seen death before. He'd seen it up close. But nothing like this. They slowly entered the bridge. The captain of the Oranjedan still sat in his chair, eyes bulging, face contorted in an unnatural scream. One hand was still gripping the radio microphone. The engineer was in the engine room, the helmsman at the wheel, the navigator by his charts, the cook in the galley, everyone at their post, everyone dead, all in the same terrified poses. Below deck, they found the ship's dog. Its lips were still curled back in a final growl. Whatever happened here happened fast. The bodies had no wounds, no signs of struggle, no blood, no evidence of fire or flooding. In the cargo hold, barrels were stacked neatly, lining the walls. Becker slowly crossed the room to read the labels. Then there was a sudden creak from inside the hold. The men froze. The creak turned into a groan. The sound of metal bending. Then came the smell, sharp and bitter. Chemicals. The air burned their lungs. Morrison choked out the order to fall back. The men scrambled to the deck, gasping. Morrison called for tow cables. They had to get the ship to port for investigation. Well, as the boarding party worked, they noticed black smoke seeping from below decks. Then came a deep rumble. The temperature on the Oranjedan suddenly rose, and something was throwing off heat. Morrison ordered immediate evacuation. They barely made it back to the Silver Star when the Oranjedan exploded. The blast launched it completely out of the water before it crashed down and broke apart. Morrison and his crew watched as it sank to the bottom of the sea. The Oranjedan is still one of the most disturbing maritime mysteries. The crew's expressions of terror have never been explained.
Did they check the deck for K-pop? Ice cream chillin',
ice cream chillin'. K-pop wasn't invented yet.
Ah, I missed the before times.
So we have ghost ships where the entire crew vanishes, and ghost ships where the entire crew is dead. But there's another type of ghost ship, even more mysterious. The ghost ships that travel through time. Every year, ships completely vanish. When they disappear, they fully disappear. They fall off radar. Searches find nothing. Usually this means the ship is sunk. But some reappear. Sometimes weeks, months, or even years later, and they're completely intact and seaworthy and empty. The SS Bechimo got stuck in ice near Alaska in 1931. The ice was crushing the hull, so the crew abandoned ship. They assumed the ship was doomed. It wasn't. For the next 38 years, the Bechimo was seen drifting through Arctic waters. Sometimes it appeared in impossible locations, far from where it was last seen, moving against the current. The last confirmed sighting was in 1969, but some Inuit hunters claim they've seen it as recently as 2006. 75 years of sailing with no crew. In 1881, Captain Griffin of the schooner Ellen Austin spotted a ship sailing erratically while crossing the Atlantic. It was completely deserted, but in perfect condition. Personal belongings were all in place, and plenty of food was aboard. Seeing an opportunity to claim salvage, Griffin put some of his own crew aboard the empty ship and set course for New York.
Uh-oh. Captain beamed down the red shirts.
Well, the two ships got separated in a storm. A few days later, Captain Griffin found the ship, again adrift. Again, the ship was empty. His own crew vanished. A second volunteer crew was sent aboard.
More red shirts.
This time, the two ships got separated by fog. When the fog cleared, the derelict ship was gone, and it was never seen again.
Called it.
This area of the Atlantic didn't have a name then. Now we know it as the Bermuda Triangle. A really weird ghost ship story is the El Fausto. This fishing boat disappeared in 1968 near the Canary Islands. They're heading to another island only 7 hours away. They never arrived. Days passed. The Spanish authorities launched a massive search operation. Air and sea units scoured the area. The ship was gone. A few days later, a British ship found the El Fausto adrift. All four men were alive, but exhausted. Their family celebrated. They were coming home. Except they refused to be rescued. They insisted there was nothing wrong with their ship. They accepted some food and water and said they were heading home. They never made it. Again, a massive search. Again, no sign of the boat. On August 7th, the men were officially declared lost at sea. 3 months later, an Italian vessel found the El Fausto drifting near the Tropic of Cancer. Everything was in working order. No damage, no signs of struggle. Below deck was a single corpse. A man, naked and mummified, clinging to the radio. His body positioned as if making one final desperate call. It was Julio Garcia, one of the original crew. Beside him was a notebook. All the pages were torn out except one. It was a message to his wife. Don't ever tell our son what happened to me. You know God wanted this fate for me. Love you. The Italians tried to tow the El Fausto to Venezuela. 2 days later, the tow line snapped. The boat suddenly sank. Nobody knows why. And nobody knows who tore out the pages in the notebook or what they said. Nobody knows why the crew refused to be rescued or what happened to them. All we have is a corpse and a cryptic note. The rest of the evidence is now at the bottom of the sea. Ghost ships aren't just stories from the past. They still happen today. The High Aim 6 was discovered in 2003, drifting in Australian waters. The Taiwanese fishing boat was completely seaworthy. Engine in working condition, plenty of fuel, a full cargo of fish in its hold. The crew's personal belongings were untouched, but not a single person was aboard. April 2007, the CAS II, a 30-foot catamaran, was found drifting off the Great Barrier Reef. The engine was still running. A laptop computer was still on. The table was set for a meal with food and drinks. The GPS and emergency equipment were untouched. The three-man crew had vanished. Their life jackets were still stowed away. November 2008, the 4,000-ton Taiwanese fishing vessel Tai Ching 21 vanished off the coast of Kiribati in the Pacific. The weather was perfect. No distress signal was sent. The ship with 29 crew members aboard simply disappeared. 3 weeks later, searchers found a single life jacket. Nothing else. Despite satellites, GPS, and constant communication, the ocean is dangerous, vast, and unpredictable. Ghost ship stories go back centuries but share similar features. Meals left uneaten, personal belongings undisturbed, no signs of panic. Crew vanished in an instant, as if simply plucked from reality. These patterns span from the Mary Celeste in 1872 to the CAS II in 2007. From sailing vessels to modern motorcraft, from the Atlantic to the Pacific. But not all ghost ships are found in the ocean. Some are found where water doesn't even exist. Not all ghost ships are found in the ocean. In 1870, the San Bernardino Guardian reported a ship discovered deep in the Mojave Desert. A Spanish galleon, at least 250 feet long, completely intact. The desert winds had stripped away most of the rigging, but the wood was still there. The report said one-third of the vessel was still visible above the sand. Charlie Klusker read that article and recognized the story immediately. While traveling across the desert, he met the Quechua tribe, who told him a myth about a vast sea that once covered the desert. A great bird with white wings landed as the waters receded and got stuck in the sand. The bird's white wings fell, and all that remained was a tall, bare tree. Then sand covered everything. Charlie understood now. The white wings weren't wings. They were sails. The tree was a mast. The bird was a ship. A Spanish treasure galleon, loaded with gold and black pearls, miles from any ocean. Charlie gathered supplies and headed into the harsh Mojave Desert to find the treasure ship. It was 125 degrees during the day. It was freezing at night. Water was scarce. Snakes and scorpions could be waiting under any rock, behind any cactus. Charlie didn't care. He made three trips to the desert. On the second one, delirious from thirst, he spotted it through his telescope, the mast of a massive galleon. Then he collapsed. The local newspaper reported Charlie's discovery. Word spread across the country. The New York Times, the Cincinnati Press, the New Orleans Times-Picayune, they all ran the story. Charlie Klusker became famous. An editor joined his third expedition. This time they had 108 gallons of water, enough food for 2 months, a full crew. They never found the ship. 6 weeks in the desert and nothing. The newspaper men left after 20 days. Charlie kept searching. He returned empty-handed. The newspapers lost interest and Charlie gave up and moved on. But the story didn't die. In 1892, another explorer claimed to find the ship. In 1907, another. In 1949, Myrtle Botts was hiking in the desert and stumbled across an ancient ship. She returned with her husband days later, but there had been an earthquake. The sand shifted. The ship was gone, buried again. The ship in the Mojave is always described the same way. Always just barely visible, always loaded with treasure, always vanishing when people return with proper equipment. But the location of the ship varies, as if it's somehow sailing the sands of the desert. Today, treasure hunters still search the desert near the Salton Sea. Modern technology hasn't helped. Ground-penetrating radar, metal detectors, GPS. No sign of the ghost ship that so many claim to have seen with their own eyes. The desert is vast and dangerous. 200,000 square miles of sand and rock. The ship could be anywhere or nowhere. But a buried Spanish galleon loaded with treasure? That legend will never go away. That is, until someone finds it. Ghost ships, missing crews, vessels in impossible places. These mysteries go back hundreds of years, and the mysteries will continue. We still know very little about the ocean.
The ocean is a dangerous place for seamen.
It is, but...
Sometimes they get swallowed.
Okay.
Sometimes seamen get spit back out.
That's enough.
Well, I'm talking about seamen in the ocean.
Just stop saying that word.
Ocean?
Seamen. Okay, we covered a lot of stories. Which ones are real and which ones are just legends? Well, the Mary Celeste was real. It was found abandoned in 1872. The crew's disappearance is still unsolved. The most likely explanation is the cargo, industrial alcohol. There were a few empty barrels. Alcohol might have leaked into the bilge, fumes rising, and the crew could smell it. Industrial alcohol is highly flammable. One small spark and boom, 1,700 barrels explode. There'd be nothing left of the ship but splinters. Captain Briggs knew this, so he ordered everyone into the lifeboat. The plan was to follow the ship from a safe distance using a line. The line broke. A storm hit, the lifeboat gets destroyed, and all 10 people are lost at sea. This is the most likely theory, but it remains a mystery because not a single trace of evidence has ever been found. The Eurymedon is different. Many historians doubt it existed. No official records confirm this Dutch freighter. But there is a rumor that the ship was carrying chemicals used in warfare, so it was sailing under a different name. The story first appeared in the 1940s in various publications. If it happened, chemical cargo explains both the deaths and the explosion. And bad chemical storage releases toxic gases that cause facial contortions exactly like those described. The Carol A. Deering definitely existed. It ran aground at Cape Hatteras in 1921. Mutiny is the most likely answer. Witnesses reported hearing the crew shouting about overthrowing the captain days before the ship was found. The crew probably fled after running aground to avoid punishment. But again, that's a theory. If it was mutiny, why abandon a perfectly good ship with full provisions? And if it was pirates, why leave the cargo? If it was weather, why no distress call? Despite extensive investigations by the U.S. Navy, FBI, and State Department, no trace of the captain, officers, or crew was ever found. This is still one of the most famous maritime disappearances in American history. The El Fausto disappearances are true. The most logical theory is that they were drug traffickers or involved in something illegal. This explains their strange behavior and refusal to be rescued. The torn notebook pages might have contained dangerous information. Julio's cryptic message suggests he knew he was in danger but couldn't reveal why. The SS Bechimo's decades-long ghost voyage is well-documented. After being abandoned in 1931, it was spotted numerous times over decades. Nothing supernatural here. Strong Arctic currents, changing ice conditions, the ship's reinforced hull kept it afloat. It eventually disappeared, probably sinking in rough seas or becoming trapped in ice. But I hope it's still out there somewhere. Now, the desert ship is more legend than reality, but it's not impossible. The Salton Basin has changed dramatically over centuries. It was once Lake Kauia, an ancient inland sea about six times larger than the current Salton Sea. Water levels rose and fell with seasonal flooding and drought. The Colorado River sometimes filled the basin to capacity, other times it was bone dry. In the early 1600s, Spanish explorer Juan de Iturbe led an expedition up the Gulf of California. He was hunting black pearls. His ship, loaded with treasure, ventured too far up the Colorado River during flood season. As waters receded, the ship became stranded. Iturbe and the crew abandoned it, taking what pearls they could carry, but leaving most behind. Over the years, the ship sank deeper as the lake dried completely. And geological evidence confirms the basin's water did fluctuate. And Spanish records document pearl-hunting expeditions in this region. So while treasure hunters may have embellished the story, it's plausible. A Spanish galleon really could have sailed inland during high water, got stuck, and then buried by sand and time. It's one of my favorite all-time stories. I kinda think it's out there somewhere. Modern ghost ships usually have a straightforward explanation. Video evidence showed a CAS-2 crew member falling overboard while others tried to help. The HIAM-6 engineer killed the captain and fled. The Tai Ching 21 probably encountered pirates who removed all evidence of their attack. What makes these stories compelling isn't just mystery. It's what they reveal about our relationship with the sea. Despite our technology and understanding, the ocean is still vast, unpredictable, and sometimes deadly. The sea has claimed thousands of vessels throughout history. Most disappear without witnesses, without a trace.
Yeah, the ocean is basically a very moist graveyard.
With really good seafood.
You sick bastard.
We build better ships, install better safety systems, track vessels by satellite. But ships still disappear. Crews vanish without a trace. We've conquered a lot of nature, bent it to our will, but not the ocean. It takes our ships as if to remind us some things are beyond human control. Maybe that's why ghost ship stories endure. Not because they frighten us, but because they humble us. The stories remind us we're not masters of the earth. We're just temporary visitors, just a small part of something much bigger, something we're not meant to understand. And if we venture too far, the universe is there to put us right back in our place. Thank you so much for hanging out today. My name is AJ. Here's Hecklefish.
Ahoy, matey, yo-ho!
This has been The Y-Files. If you had fun or learned anything, do him a favor. Subscribe, comment, like, share. That's such a small thing to push the button, but it means a lot to the channel. Like most topics we cover here, today's was recommended by you. All those stories were. So if there's something you'd like to see or learn more about, go to thewyfiles.com/tips. Remember, The Wi Files is also a podcast. That's kind of why you're seeing those strip videos. Those are really just meant to be podcasts to listen to on the go. They're not meant to be big productions. So if that's what you like, they're there. If you don't like them, I'm sorry. But we're going to be doing those about twice a week, also posting deep dives into the stories that we've covered on the channel, and we'll also post episodes that wouldn't be allowed on the channel. So if you're into podcasts, it's called The Wi-Files Operation Podcast, and it's available everywhere. If you need more Wi-Files in your life, check out our Discord server. There are thousands of people on there 24/7, and they're into the same weird stuff that we are. It's a great community, it's really supportive, it's a lot of fun, and it's free to join. If you want to know what's going on with The Wi-Files at any given time, check out our production calendar. It's at thewifiles.com/cal. And there we post our episode schedule, upcoming podcasts, live streams, all that stuff, when we remember to update it. And a special thanks to our patrons who make this channel possible. Every episode of The Wi-Files is dedicated to our Patreon members. I could not do this without you, and I appreciate your support over the last year, which you know was difficult. And if you'd like to support the channel, join our community, consider becoming a member on Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you get access to perks like videos early with no commercials, access to merch only available to members, plus you get 2 private live streams every week just for you. And on those, the whole team is on. My camera's on, you can turn yours on, jump up on stage, ask a question, you want to talk about a topic, advice on life, tell a joke, whatever you want. It's a great way to get to know us as people. Another great way to support the channel is grab something for the Wi-Fi store.
Grab a heck of a t-shirt or one of these fistable coffee mugs that you stick your peg leg in or your fist or whatever you want to stick in there. I don't mind. I won't report you to HR or nothing. Or grab a hoodie or something with my face on it. Or get one of these creepy U2's dolls that's totally haunted. Or get a stuffed, squeezy animal talking heck of a doll toy.
But if you're going to buy merch, make sure you become a member on YouTube. YouTube members get 10% off everything in the Wi-Fi store forever, and it's only $3 to join. So if you're going to go to the store and spend $40, become a member, get 10% off. It already paid for itself, and it helps out the channel.
Yeah, try not to spread the word around, all right? You're really cutting into my margins.
Those are the plugs. Whew. And that's going to do it. Until next time, be safe, be kind, and know that you are appreciated.
A secret code inside the Bible said I was. I love my UFOs and paranormal fun, as well as music, so I'm singing like I should. But then another conspiracy theory becomes the truth, my friends, and it never ends. No, it never ends. And I got stuck inside Mel's home with MK Ultra. I've been only too aware. Did Stanley Kubrick fake the moon landing alone on a film set? Or were the shadow people there? The Roswell aliens just fought the smiling man, I'm told. And his name was Cold. And I can't believe secret city underground. Mysterious number stations, planet circle to Project Stargate, and what the Dark Watchers found. We're in a simulation, don't you worry though. The Black Knight satellite, it told me so. I can't believe